Hey, it's Lisa Z from RCP with Jim and Laura here. We want to warn our listeners that the topics we're discussing today are very important to all of us, but they may be upsetting to some people. And if you or someone you know is experiencing thoughts of depression or self-harm, please stop right now and call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. The line is available 24/7. It is free and completely confidential. Laura?
And in the UK, you can call Hopeline, which is for the prevention of young suicide, on 0800 068 4141. Or the Samaritans can be contacted on 116 123. Childline on 0800 1111. And if you're in Australia, there's the Crisis Support Service Lifeline, which is 131114. So what we're going to talk about, people may find triggering. And so it's important that you know what help is out there. And also, please do use your self-care tools as well. But we think it's really important to have this conversation, which is why we're going to be talking about key themes coming out of 13 Reasons Why.
And in addition to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline in the United States, you can call the Suicide Crisis Line at 1-800-784-2433.
Alex? Alex, stand up! Alex? What the hell? Oh, what were you thinking? Seriously?
Come on, Hannah, you know you can't be in here.
Why not? You've all been staring at my ass all day.
Hey, get out! It's a boys' locker room.
We're not done.
And I was an asshole, and I'm sorry. And I can never make it right. I can never say all this to you, but I love you. I will never hurt you.
Clay.
I'm not going. Not now. Not ever. I love you, Hannah.
Why didn't you say this to me when I was alive?
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. This is Jim Clementi, former New York City prosecutor, retired FBI profiler, and writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. With me from London is...
From rainy London is criminal behavioral analyst Laura Richards, former New Scotland Yard advocate and founder of Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service. And I also hold a BSc and also a master's in forensic and legal psychology.
And I am Lisa Zambetti. I am the casting director for Criminal Minds, where Jim Clementi is my colleague. So here we go. We are resuming our coverage of 13 Reasons Why. We covered the first few episodes last time. And again, we want to, at the very get-go, refer you to a couple of organizations that we might not have mentioned last time. There's one place I wanted to bring to your attention. It's called www.youcannotbereplaced.com. And that mantra, you cannot be replaced, when I read it on this website, just struck such a deep chord with me. I really urge you to go to it. It's a wonderful organization. It's very unique. I don't even want to take the time to explain it right now, but it's about supporting each other and passing along wristbands. You know, in 13 Reasons Why, Hannah has people pass on her cassette tapes. In You Cannot Be Replaced, the organization passes on wristbands to each other. So if you see someone that you think is in trouble, you give them a wristband that says you cannot be replaced. And I just feel like that's such a powerful, powerful message. So yeah, if you want to check out that website.
That's great. And yeah, we're talking about now episode 4 of 13 Reasons Why, the original Netflix series that deals with teen suicide and the potential plethora of reasons why people might think about committing suicide. It also is a great statement about how if people actually communicate better, that this kind of thing hopefully can be avoided.
We're going to catch up now to episode 4, which is all about Tyler, who is this kid at school who has works for the newspaper, and he's a budding photographer, and he's always around everywhere with his camera, which means that he can be anywhere and have access to almost any place on campus and around school and not really be questioned because he has his cameras. And we come to find out, or at least they describe, Hannah describes him as being her stalker. She feels like she's being watched. She's not sure who it is, and she wants to find out, and it turns out to be this kid. Laura, do you want to talk about that?
I'd really like to talk about this, because I think that actually there's a number of misconceptions here. Certainly, you know, there's an opener around, you know, we are a society of stalkers. Well, I have to challenge that, because we're not a society of stalkers. Yes, there is something about our lives are online now. So people post on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. But looking at those things does not make you a stalker. So I just want to right out the gate say, you know, Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service, we do have a clear definition of what stalking is. And it is a pattern of unwanted and fixated and obsessive behavior, which is intrusive and causes fear of violence or serious alarm or distress. So it's a repeated pattern of behavior, and it's something that creates a fear within someone, and it's very intrusive. But it's a fixated aspect. It's when someone has an intense preoccupation with another. And I think the way that it's introduced here of, you know, talking about the society of stalkers and that stalking someone in real life is a whole other thing is what she says. Well, actually, most stalkers, I can hear Jim already reacting to that, because right. Most stalkers would do both online and offline behavior. And stalking isn't just about someone physically following someone else. It's a whole range of behaviors. Some are direct behaviors, some are indirect behaviors. So I think that there are, this particular part isn't well done for me. They don't portray it or characterize it in a helpful way. And we're constantly saying to people when they joke about stalking, oh, I, you know, followed you on Facebook, you know, on Stalker Book, you know, and call it in this vein. But actually, it is about fixated behavior. And of course, people live their lives online and offline. So I think it's important to call it out for what it is. And
yeah,
of course, later on, we hear a little bit more about the impact that it's having on Hannah. So that's when it starts to transition, her saying that she thinks somebody's watching her, someone's invading her privacy, and she's creeped out by it. And then we have this scene, don't we, between her and Courtney. Courtney coming over, they decide they're going to catch whoever this person is. And they lay a trap, which actually I know a lot of people who do this kind of thing when they don't know who it is. And so they come up with this way of using like a stun light. But of course, there's a number of other themes that come out of Courtney going to stay at Hannah's, where they decide to have a little bit of what they call courage. So they have some alcohol and then they start playing kind of like a truth or dare type game. And things start to take a different turn, don't they, in terms of there seems to be some sexual fluidity here, you know, whether it's experimentation. Call it what you will. Teenagers do tend to experiment, of course. And, you know, for Hannah, it looks like it's just more about experimentation and going with it. But for Courtney, we start to understand that maybe she has an interest in girls more so than Hannah does. And when Hannah hears the photographs being taken, she's attuned to it. And I think that's another important thing for victims. They hear things that other people don't. They adapt and they attune, they become hypervigilant. And so she hears the click of the camera and she basically grabs the stun light and she shines it in Courtney's face first to get her off of her, and then opens the window and puts it outside. And of course, it's revealed to be Tyler, the geeky kid from school who takes pictures for the school paper. And, you know, I'm not sure who is the most shocked in this scene. Is it Tyler or is it Hannah? But sometimes when we don't know who it is who's doing something to us, the anonymity of it can become much creepier and scarier when you don't know who it is. But now she knows, you know, and she feels sort of humiliated by it. And we have a number of scenes between Clay and Tyler, and also Hannah just talking through how his behavior made her feel. I don't know how either of you felt about the scene. What did you think, Lisa?
I just wanted to ask you a question. Do you think that he was stalking her, or was he a peeping Tom? Or
correct me
if I'm wrong, that stalkers want their stalkee to know that they're there and to feel afraid and terrified. Do you feel that Tyler? I think Tyler thought that he was anonymous and she didn't really realize that he was taking her pictures and peeping on her. I don't know. Is there a difference? Or
We have to remember stalkers are motivated by different things. So even to talk about them like they're homogenous is not a true representation of what we understand about stalking. So here we have someone in his day-to-day life, he kind of says, well, you know, I get to stalk people because it's my job. Well, no, taking pictures and doing, you know, something legitimately, and there is a fine line between, for example, what the media and the press were doing to Princess Diana and other celebrities. You know, there's a very fine line here that when it becomes intrusive, when it borders on creating fear for somebody, then that's when we get into harassment and stalking. But for him, for me, it's motivated by him wanting to invade her privacy. He clearly has an infatuation with her and is fixated and fixating and obsessive about her. And we hear him talk about that later on, that he enjoyed seeing her authenticity, as he called it. But this is creepy behavior. I mean, this is a guy, yes. These are gateway offenses. And I am very concerned about that type of young man in this situation who is behaving and acting out in this way. It's predatory behavior, and he has crossed a line. It is a criminal offense, and that's what I liked about Clay challenging him, saying that it was a criminal offense and that he needed to be sanctioned for it and holding him to account for it. And he called it, you know, he said it was an invasion of a minor's privacy. It's a crime. Actually, it's a crime called stalking. It's very simple. And he could be arrested for that, even though he says, I stalk everyone. Well, here's somebody who does need to be held to account. And he said that, you know, he fell in love with Hannah. And so therefore, he enjoyed taking pictures of her. And even when Clay says, you must destroy the pictures, he says creepily, oh, but can I keep one? You know, it's creepy shit, I'm afraid. And this is a kid that's very concerning and needs to be held to account. What do you think, Gypsy?
Right. Well, first of all, to answer Lisa's question, peeping versus stalking, peeping is a form of stalking. It is one, as Laura said, it's a gateway offense, not only to stalking, but to other even more violent and serious crimes. But it is certainly, both are an invasion of someone's privacy. And in this case, Hannah is naturally terrified about the fact that she has a stalker, and the fact that Tyler feels that he is somehow entitled to wait by her house to catch pictures of her is not okay. And what makes it really even more insidious and criminal is that he believes it is justified. When Clay confronts him, he said, no, it's not that I'm stalking her. I love her. Well, that is one of, erotomatic stalkers say that all the time. And they're very deadly. They're people who kill their victims eventually when the victims don't, reciprocate the same kind of love. And so this is absolutely not a justification. And for Tyler to feel justified because he, quote, loves her, it clearly sets up a situation in which Tyler can become dangerous. And that is not a good thing. So, by all accounts, this is a very, very risky, dangerous criminal behavior that Tyler is engaging in. And the fact that he feels he can rationalize it actually increases the risk to Hannah.
It's important to acknowledge what Hannah says about the impact on her. And this is really where the intrusion, the kind of the creepiness and making somebody feel unsafe. She says she never stopped feeling afraid. And that's an important thing to acknowledge. This is when, certainly in UK law, it becomes a crime of stalking. And, you know, she says that she became paranoid. So it's that intrusion and sense that somebody doesn't feel safe anymore. And, you know, he seems to be completely oblivious of that. So that would be the crime right there. And it's important to take ownership and responsibility and hold him to account for that, because he could well escalate to other things. And then you kind of have the repercussion, don't you? The justice meted out by Clay of paying him back, of reversing the table, turning the tables on him, and closing down his space, but taking a picture of him in the shower and then sending it around the school as his own sense of, you know, poetic justice, I guess.
So that part really bothered me because it is kind of just repeating history. So Clay is doing, you know, to Tyler what he did to the girls. And it just felt like if this were all about Tyler's killing himself, you know, Clay would be the bad guy. Clay would be the bully in this situation. I just think it's interesting how, you know, we can all justify the things that we do. And I thought it was interesting when Tyler asks Hannah out and she turns him down and he retaliates. He just doesn't see that it's wrong to circulate these pictures. And it's like, oh, well, nobody can tell who the girls are. Nobody's going to know. But in high school, you think that everybody knows. It's such a magnified, horrific experience. And for Courtney, she has a huge, huge reaction to it.
Yeah, it's wrong on so many levels. I mean, Clay retaliating in the same way. I mean, he's becoming the monster he's complaining about. And we will see it does have disastrous effects in this case. And then on top of that, the fact that Tyler doesn't see that by sort of being outed as her stalker, that doesn't endear him to Hannah. It doesn't mean that that's the kind of person she wants to go out with. It means that he doesn't have any clue how offensive his behavior is. And that's, you know, not having that kind of self-awareness is distressing. You know, it's disturbing, I mean. It's disturbing because he will keep going on doing it if he doesn't understand how bad it is. And to have it reinforced by Clay, this is the third time now that we've seen Clay kind of dirtied up.
I think that for kids, giving information about what can be part of the high school experience, these negative experiences that can occur, these do happen in real life. And as educators, we have to be aware of that. We have to help to promote to our parents that these things are happening.
Even before Clay takes that picture of Tyler's backside, you can see that there are all these broken windows in Tyler's room. So because of the tapes, all these other, I'm going to call them douche bros. I'm sorry if that's an offensive word, but all the douche bros and the jocks have been, you know, throwing rocks at his window and bullying him, you know, so this is just perpetuating bullying. Unfortunately, Hannah is perpetuating, you know, bullying times 12.
Well, this is her sense of justice being meted out, isn't it? And that's why I do have a problem with the way, you know, she now becomes the aggressor and turns the tables. And I feel very uncomfortable about that in terms of what's happening. It's kind of like killing people to tell you that killing is wrong, isn't it? Ultimately, there's an irony there.
There is.
I think that we're supposed to feel uncomfortable. I think we're supposed to see how everybody can be guilty. You just never know what people's motivations are.
And I think the backdrop to all this is that Hannah's parents are dealing with their own severe loss and how it affects their lives. And it's just, it is a very unfortunate side effect of suicide, that the people that are left don't understand and are hurt by it, and they miss the people that are gone, and they wish that they could have helped and they could have found a way to make that person feel better and not commit suicide. And it's just a terrible tragedy. There's just no good in it, and very, very, very difficult circumstances for everybody, including the person who committed suicide. It's just sad. It's terribly sad that the confluence of events brought her to the point where she felt her only way out was to commit suicide.
Okay, so we're moving into episode 5 now, which is all about Courtney, we realize. I think we don't mention it, that this episode takes place in Halloween, and, you know, a lot of women or a lot of girls love to dress up for Halloween. They really get to express themselves in all kinds of sexy outfits and all kinds of other things, but there's definitely a backlash. So Courtney's been giving Hannah the cold shoulder and you know, pushing her aside ever since the picture debacle, and Courtney's convinced that they can be identified in the picture when clearly that's not the case. I mean, nobody really knows who's in this picture, and they're pointing fingers at all kinds of people.
Right. So even though Courtney and Hannah made up, then Courtney gets kind of confronted because somebody does figure it out, and this dude starts soliciting her for three ways, and she basically lies her way out of it. Tells them that it was Hannah and Sky that were making out. And then she starts giving this guy intimate details of Hannah's night at the park with Justin and, you know, making it up and throwing Hannah under the bus in an even more offensive, deeper way. So it's just kind of like, it seems like nobody is immune from becoming a bully. Everybody, you know, they get hurt, so they're going to hurt others. And that's the way they're going to play it. And again, it's quite immature. It's absolutely unnecessary. And it causes a ripple effect that is going to be felt for a very long time in this town.
The confrontation is quite an important one, though, isn't it? Where she says to Courtney, "Don't hide behind me because you don't like who you are." I thought that was quite a strong and important line, you know, where someone throws their shadow out onto somebody else, where they project because they want to transfer and, you know, put the emphasis on someone else with great expense. I mean, for Hannah, here she is again, coming under fire and being, you know, the brunt of somebody else's, you know, upset. And I think that that's incredibly unfortunate, but there are a lot of people who do that. And I think that was a very strong statement, her saying, "Don't hide behind me because you don't like who you are." And Courtney, of course, is grappling with lots of, you know, emotions, and she was being shamed herself, and she's got a lot to deal with too. But that's no excuse for, you know, creating more misery and upset for Hannah. She was sort of the patsy, and I felt very sorry for Hannah in this situation, who was just trying to help people. She was trying to help Courtney, you know, and then she's trying to help Jessica, her friend who's paralytic, who's so drunk. And even though Jess was horrible to her and slapped her around the face for nothing that Hannah did, she's still trying to help her. And so you have this kind of characterization of Hannah of somebody who's a supportive friend, always looking out for you. And unfortunately, she just keeps getting dumped on.
Yeah, and I think it's another one of the ramifications of judging people by their sexuality and the fact that Courtney feels that, you know, she's either gay or she's dealing with thinking about it and does not want to be labeled that way. And because of her fear, she lashes out to hurt somebody else so that she won't be the target of ridicule or judging. So it's just a terrible, vicious circle here.
Now, while I know this, you know, this is very true to life and it does happen, I do not like how the show dealt with this character of Courtney because, you know, LGBTQ stands for lesbian, gay, bi, trans, queer, and or questioning. And I felt like the writer and writers in this episode really put Courtney in a box that, like, either she's gay or she's straight. And either she's in the closet and is not, you know, able to come out for any number of reasons. And I just felt like that was such a narrow box for her to be in that, again, as we've said before, high school and middle school is the time for sometimes for experimenting or figuring out what your sexuality is or any number of things, and to make it seem like she's pressured to be that she's unhappy because she's not out yet. I just thought that was for this show just seemed to be very short-sighted, and I would have liked it to be more open than that, because there are clearly characters who are at home with their sexuality and how they identify themselves. There are, you know, many gay characters in this piece, and I just felt like she was sort of that the queer and questioning kids were kind of being squeezed out of this dialogue.
Yeah, well, she can't represent everything. So I guess they chose this particular facet of the spectrum of behavior that is sexuality. I mean, it's not just gay or straight. There's certainly a number of demarcations along the way, including bisexuality. And the fact that people... the fact that people develop their sexuality over time. Some people are very much aware of their sexuality from day one, and some people discover it. And for some people, it's malleable. So they can't really, I mean, they have to choose something for this character, and I think they picked that. And that is a real concern. Many people who find themselves in, an alternative sexual identity situation will feel pressure that they don't want to be looked at as different. They don't want to come out at the same time that they want to explore that sexuality. So it's a very difficult thing. That difficulty will go away when people stop judging people because of who they are, or who they're in love with, or who they're sexually attracted to, or who they feel they identify as.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, she wants to protect her father. So she's got, same-sex parents. And, she feels that somehow she's letting them down or showing that they're not good parents if she, comes out. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because you would think it would be the opposite, right? That she would feel that they would be totally accepting of her and therefore not have a problem. But maybe she's projecting the fact that they had a difficult time when they grew up. She's projecting that and saying, they wouldn't want me to have that difficult time, so I'm not going to tell them I'm going through it. Sounds like a, convoluted choice. I think if she was just open with them and talked to them about it, that it would all have been much more easily resolved.
So in this scene, we go to this dance, and it is a nice moment to see Hannah being happy and finally feeling like she has friends, and there's a nice little connection. The show does a lot with objects and objects connecting through the past and the future, and Hannah's wearing this corsage that you see later when her father in the present time is opening a box, and it's kind of a dried corsage. And these objects connect us and kind of tell us where we are in the story emotionally. So I like that little detail. But so she's at the dance, she's having fun, and of course some douche bro, idiots up to her and tells her about the rumor that he's heard from Courtney about, having a threesome and all that. It's just horrible and it's thoughtless and devastating to her.
And of course he says it and, in front of Clay. And so she's just got together with Clay in a sense. So you get this feel of happiness that, they've connected on a different level and it's very short lived. And he says those horrible, grotesque things of what, she allegedly did with Justin within earshot of Clay. And of course, you see this moment of Hannah just feeling devastated and, Clay talking to someone else saying, well, she thinks I care about this stuff, but I don't. But of course, Hannah now is preoccupied with bailing out her friend Jessica and taking care of her and getting her into this brand new Jeep that her father had got for her, getting her in the car and caretaking her friend, being a good friend.
Right. She was a good friend. I mean, that's the thing. She tries to be there for all the people around her. This is not going to be the last time that she tries to, help somebody. So that's the dance. And of course, poor Clay. It just goes wrong. One thing that did bother me in this scene that they start to get more and more explicit about how Hannah killed herself. And I really didn't like that. They show her for a brief second with blood coming down her arms. And I just was like, why? Well, why do we? I thought it was better when we just, had to use our imagination or not have to get so specific about that. But
well, of course, the show got some criticism over that. And we'll talk about it in the last scene. Mm-hmm. I actually don't have a problem with that. I think that suicide is ugly. And, in the sense of the act itself and what she does, it's not pretty. It's the same as, when we talk about homicide. And yes, it's jarring, it's upsetting, it's difficult to see it. There are some who say that it's kind of sensationalized and kind of gratuitous and maybe a bit extra in terms of the way that it's portrayed. But I think it's an important thing to bring back into consciousness, just, exactly what it means. And how devastating it is. I think you have to start to have those conversations, and they use imagery. I think it's an important part of the conversation, but that's just my personal opinion.
Sure. In this episode, we also see for the first time that Clay's mom is a lawyer, and she's meeting with Principal, played by Steven Weber. And it's very interesting here. They dropped us this little detail that I made me think about it all throughout the rest of the show, where the principal says, you know, it's terrible to have lost two students. And it just kind of breezes past that little detail. And we do come to find out that more than Hannah have been lost in this time period. And then we have the scene with the counselor Derek Luke, talking to Tyler, complaining he's been pantsed. And the counselor is like, what does being pantsed mean? And he starts almost blaming Tyler, like, well, what did you do to make them pants you? I mean, that to me just rang really false. Like, I don't know why all of a sudden he would be
it's victim blaming, right?
Yeah, but why would a counselor do that? Because they do.
And this is something that people all the time do. And I think it's a unique situation in which it comes up. Okay. Because usually it'll come up with women who are raped, women who are date raped, women who, get
stalked or
picked on.
Domestic violence. Or...
Right. I mean, so it's just a different way of getting us into this subject. But, you know, what did you do? How many times have we, you know, when we covered the Nicole Brown Simpson murder, we talked about her, the history, and what did the 911 operator say to her? What did you do? Did you do something to make him angry?
Yeah,
right? This is exactly the same kind of thing in my mind. And although in this particular case, Tyler did have a lot of baggage, Tyler did bring this on, but that doesn't justify somebody doing it to him. So I thought it was a very poignant way to sort of flip the script on how this really usually goes down and change the target of that kind of victim blaming.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we hear it all the time. So I think it's an important thing to have in there. And of course, the victim blaming continues, as a theme. But we are hearing the unique victim's voice throughout this. And you know, I do think that that's what makes this unique. And from the victim's perspective, we're hearing that narrative, which I applaud them for doing. I think that, you know, we're getting that unique insight, and that's important with this show. That's important with this show.
I'm on this list. But you need to be here if I'm going to tell my story. I'm going to explain why I did what I did. Because you aren't every other guy.
Good old Clay is making his way through these tapes. The other kids are just getting more and more worried that he's going to spill the beans to somebody he shouldn't, and they try to scare him. The bros get him into a car, and Alex tries to scare him by speeding. And then... Alex's dad, played by good old Mark Pellegrino. Do you know Mark Pellegrino?
Yes.
He's a wonderful actor. He's been on Criminal Minds and a million things. Pulls him over, and you realize that Alex's dad is a cop.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
And I want to say something about this, because people just brush right over this, scare him by speeding. They were going 120 miles an hour in a suburban situation. And recently... somebody I know told me that their sister was pulled over for going 114 miles an hour in a 30-mile-an-hour zone. And unfortunately, last year, I lost a family member when somebody was going 107 miles an hour in a 40-mile-an-hour zone and killed her. That person is going on trial for second-degree murder. And people should understand, young people should understand, that when you speed with a car, it is a deadly weapon. It is just like firing a gun in public. You can kill people, not just maybe yourself or the people in your car, but innocent people that are going about their daily lives. One of my good friends and colleagues at the FBI was killed just shortly after he retired by somebody who ran a red light and just wiped his life away. He worked so hard to get to retirement and then didn't ever get to enjoy it. And his wife is left alone because of that. Mm-hmm. people really have to be responsible when they're driving a car. It is not a toy. And you do not get to drive over the speed limit in a reckless manner, in any manner, no matter what your car is, and put other people's lives at risk. It's just wrong. There's a fundamentally wrong action being taken. Don't do it. You're going to regret it. The people's whose families you destroy are going to suffer because of it, and it's totally unnecessary. This is not joking around.
Very real life consequences. Yeah. And I think that's really important to say. And, you know, as always, Jim, I was, you know, very saddened by what happened. You know, and I think it's really important that people do understand the real life consequences. It ruins lives. And, you know, that would not happen in real life of, you know, him being pulled over and then the dad kind of, you know, just waving it and giving them a kind of a free ticket to do whatever they want to do. Absolutely not.
Well, he'd be a fool to do so.
Right. Okay.
Now we move on to episode 6. And this is basically Valentine's Day. And unfortunately, although it starts off like a promising day, it ends in a very, very tragic situation. And the subject of this latest tape is Marcus. He's basically the golden boy, the popular head of the school's honor board, and he seems like a decent guy. And
we've seen his character before in the background, you know, doing the same crude gestures to Hannah and kind of being part of the douche bros, as I call them. But now you really get to know who he is and what he's all about and how selfish, incredibly selfish.
He's all about me, myself, and I. Me, myself, and I, and me, myself, and I.
Yeah, and here's another thing. I don't get it. This whole school-sanctioned matchmaking charity event. What's that all about? What, you know, putting people together to go on a date. A date, you know, is an intimate thing. You know, even if it's in public, it's an intimate thing. And putting kids together like that, just matchmaking like that, just seems to be a little irresponsible, especially when you put somebody who's vulnerable together with somebody who's going to take advantage of them. And so I think this is a perfect example why this is not a very good idea. Even if it has a great charity benefit behind it, it turns out to be bad.
Yeah, too easily can it be twisted into something really hurtful. This happened at my high school, too, where you could, you know, send people Valentine roses during their class, and it starts to be like, well, how many people are getting Valentine roses and who didn't get one and did blah, blah, blah. And it starts to escalate in the minds of teenagers in a way that adults would be like, oh, well, this is no big deal, so which is probably why it's allowed. But
yeah, well, he begs her for a date, and they go to at Rosie's. Excuse me. He begs her for a date at Rosie's Diner, and she finally agrees, and she shows up, and then he doesn't, and for a full hour, and then he does, and he's got half the football team with him, and she's pissed off, and you know, it's kind of a, you know, a total wreck from the beginning. And then he basically pushes her way in Then he basically pushes his way onto her side of the booth and basically starts pushing himself on her and feeling her up. And that's a crime. That is a sexual assault crime. And he should be arrested for it. And it's not something that you just brush over. It's something that he did in public and should have resulted in an arrest. It's just unfortunate the way it's kind of dealt with in this situation.
It is unfortunate how it's dealt with in this situation. And you see, you know, him testing the boundaries, and you see all the guys in the background all laughing and kind of, you know, giggling. And she's just left there on her own, feeling absolutely devastated again. You know, and feeling that she's to blame somehow. And then you get the Zach character who sits there and sort of says nothing. And so you get the introduction of the bystander effect here. You know, people sitting around doing nothing, understanding what's happened is wrong, but doing nothing about it. And the bystander effect is an important theme that comes up time and time again, but they don't really explore it in too much detail other than just having it there, you know, as a theme. And I would have liked to have heard this talked about a little bit more, because the show does have the Beyond the Reasons sort of short 23-minute kind of cast, and Selena Gomez talking about the show. And I believe, Lisa, was this the extra that they were, that they put in when they came under, you know, extreme criticism, or was this always part of the show? Do you
know? Believe that that was part of the show, and there was even more that they did afterwards. I'd have to, you know, double check my sources on that. Yeah, I believe that that was always there, because this whole series was created not just, you know, by Jay Asher and Brian Yorkey, but they had lots of psychologists and psychiatrists with them all along the way. So, you know, I'm sure that they thought they were getting great advice all along the way. But I wanted to ask you about this sort of sick test that Marcus is putting Hannah through as he seems to stand her up and kind of keep texting her to keep her waiting. This sort of DTL test, down to fuck. DTF test, down to fuck. So if she waits for him over an hour, that means that she's waiting because she's a slut, and she wants, you know, she's desperate to have him. And I think that that was just so, is just sickening to me, but I'm sure is very real.
It sounds like a real common thing that college guys and sports team members would talk about and brag about and encourage each other to do. And it's just, it's despicable. And I think another thing that happened when he forces himself on her and starts sexually assaulting her, you know, she can't move and she can't speak. She's paralyzed. And she also can't help thinking it was her fault. And that's just such a terrible ramification of this, that because she is in this situation, she's paralyzed with fear, and she blames herself. It's just terrible that victims have this, you know, unfortunate, innate sense that somehow they brought this on, and it's not true. It's not true at all. This guy violated her rights, violated her space, violated her body, committed a crime, and she has no hand in it at all.
And he's doing it in public, right. And nobody's stopping him. And she feels like, oh my God, why does this keep happening to me? And why am I so stupid that I waited here for him? Why didn't I see that this was just a joke or a prank? And I mean, her self-esteem must be just plummeting. Like, I'm so stupid.
Yeah, and so you hear her in a narrative. And, of course, she hopes Marcus will kind of restore her faith, you know, having been through the photo being sent round everybody. And, you know, so she now starts to attribute it to herself and own these behaviours rather than actually know the behaviours and responsibility sits with those individuals, these disgusting individuals who are objectifying girls and women and feel entitled to just take what they want. But of right. course, we know this is going on in schools. You know, this is a true life depiction. I know this is happening, you know, most schools and colleges. This isn't just unique to Liberty High. And that's why we need to have this real conversation, because it's the girls who, and the victims who end up owning it. And she was already vulnerable, and it's the double, you know, and triple, it's the accumulative impact, the drip, drip, drip that takes effect. And it's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah. And the other thing was that what was actually happening is this is one of those ripple effects of Alex's list, because basically Marcus is saying, I thought you were easy. I mean, that was the rumor. That's why I thought I could do this. This is, you know, that's why I did it. Again, trying to rationalize, justify his behavior based on the fact that, well, everybody talks about how easy you are, so I figured I can get some. And it's just, that's what he wanted out of this. And it's just unfortunate, you know, I mean, for Hannah, that she is suffering through no fault of her own. And blaming herself through no fault of her own.
And she keeps getting shamed over and over again in front of everybody at the dance, at the diner, the this and the that. And it's just compounding. It's heartbreaking.
It's humiliating, you know, truly humiliating. And, you know, she's not just paranoid and being stalked, but it's just, you know, layer upon layer, which is the challenge. Once you get into that negative echo chamber in your head, you know, it's very hard. It's, you know, it is accumulative. And she sort of talks about it as the beginning of the end, how that negative echo chamber works in her head and is reinforced time and time again by other people's actions.
What we don't mention is that, so at the end of last episode, we see Alex, as Jim pointed out, speeding and putting everybody's life at risk, and his dad, there's no consequences for him. And in this next episode, at the top, Alex goes off and beats up one of the bro jocks, and, you know, gets a much lighter suspension than the other guy. And so these aren't triggering anything with any of the adults, that this might be signs that he himself is going through something, that his behavior is also changing. And it ends with Alex with his dad, and his dad's cleaning a gun. And, you know, from my drama school training, any time a gun is introduced, even casually in a drama, something's going to happen. You know, that gun is going to get used at some point. What do you think of this epitaph that Hannah talks about, that she heard of? Boxers don't try. I think it's a Bukowski quote. Do you know what that means? Boxers don't try.
I don't know.
Do you
I guess they
that?
Just do. I don't know. I have no idea what that means, other than they boxers don't try. They just do.
I don't know. I'm going to have to look that one up. I thought it was something that you would have heard of, and I'm going to try to remember what it.
But that's the end of episode 6, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. But once again, at the end of episode 6, we're left with a school administration that is basically stepping back and saying, well, you know, the fight didn't happen on school grounds, so it doesn't really have anything to do with the school. And it just reminds me of other institutions that are only concerned about their image and not so concerned about the people they're there to protect and educate. And it's just, it's institutional blindness. And it is very unfortunate because they are in a position to know so much more about what's going on, and they can encourage kids to avoid these kinds of behaviors and also help repair things when they happen.
Let me get back to that epitaph. I just want to clarify this. So Hannah brings up this epitaph from Charles Bukowski on his headstone. It has the picture of a boxer, and above it, it says, "Don't try." And what it means is that life is a struggle, and don't even try. So this is one of the first, you know, real overt things where she's really going down this road of life isn't worth it. You know, it's too much of a struggle. There's too much pain.
I don't know. It's weird. It's up to interpretation, because I think that boxer is threatening, and it's like, don't try me. You know, don't, gotcha. You know, don't even try it. I don't know. It's weird. It's certainly open to interpretation. That is one of the interesting things about the English language, that it's so easily manipulated and misinterpreted.
So before we move on to episode 7, we're going to be signing off. And I just wanted to give the website of the suicidepreventionlifeline.org. So it's suicidepreventionlifeline, all one word, .org. And if you go there, you'll see there are definitely different focused groups that you can talk with. So there's a lifeline for veterans, deaf, hard of hearing, Native Americans, LGBTQ, disaster survivors, all whoever you are, wherever you are, there's somebody who will talk to you about what you're feeling.
Yeah, and remember, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255. The Suicide Crisis Line is 1-800-784-2433. And the Teen Line Crisis Line is 1-800-852-8336.
And the Hope Line for teenagers in the UK is 0800-068-4141. Samaritans 116 123. Child Line 0800-1111. And Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service, if you're being stalked in England and Wales, 0203-866-4107. And you can go on the website www.paladinservice.co.uk.
And thank you for listening to Real Crime Profile.
If you like our podcast, there are a few things that you can do. You can take 2 minutes and go to Apple Podcast and leave us a 5-star review. You can also check out all Real Crime Profile offers and promotion and our sponsors in our show notes. Another thing you can do is go over to Facebook and like our Facebook page. And one last thing is please tell all your friends, family and colleagues about us and spread the Real Crime Profile word. Thank you so much for listening to us. We really appreciate you.
Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineered by Terrell Parham. Music composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203 866 4107, or you can go on the website www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic violence, call the National Domestic Violence Helpline free phone 0800 2000 247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, safety, shelter or counselling, call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, 214-946-4357, or go on their website, www.genesisshelter.org, or the domestic violence hotline on 800-799-7233.